Welcome to Pegging Paradise podcast number 200, part 2. When we left off, Michelle was talking about how vulnerability and emotions are incredibly sexy.
Yeah, the vulnerability is, it can be really, really sexy for me. It also connects up with a part of me that, for whatever reason, I've kind of fallen into this skill of holding space for people. And I think it was always kind of there once I really started doing a lot of work on myself and learning about clean communication and learning about, you know, real listening as opposed to planning your next sentence and things like that. But also really got cranked up when I started doing the whole pegging thing because there is so much holding space. You know, over and over again, it's reassuring. It's like, it's okay that you have these desires. It's okay that you want to explore this. It's okay that your partner wants to explore this. I mean, over and over and over again.
And but nobody does it for you.
Well, that's a whole different conversation.
But, I mean, that's, you, people need permission.
Yes.
And nobody is in your life right now to give that to you. I mean, I give it to you, but that's not.
No, that's true. Nobody is. But at the same time, you know, what we talked about before about how I feel privileged because I can be totally authentic. I really can. I really can. I mean, my neighbors don't know I'm Ruby Ryder. That's for sure. But a fair amount of people who live in this area where I live, who are connected to me on Facebook, do know that I'm Ruby Ryder because on my vanilla Facebook, if you will, with my real name, I'd kind of been hiding in the Ruby persona for a while. And it wasn't even hiding as much as it was, it's my passion, it's my love, I want to do this. And at the time, I wasn't comfortable with sharing it with a whole bunch of other people. And, you know, my daughter had already gotten to the point where she was over 16. But this sort of coming out, and this is the only way that I can sort of relate to what men go through, is that fear of being shamed, that fear of being rejected. And then I realized that all of these people that I was sort of afraid that they would reject me really weren't my friends anyway. They were more acquaintances. They were parents of kids my kid went to school with or something like that. And I thought, who cares? You know, I am who I am. And so I did that brief stint, my little TV thing on the Nikki Glaser show. And I went over to my vanilla Facebook and I put a link up and I said, so y'all have probably been wondering what the hell's happening with me the past number of years. And this is what I'm working on. And I put the link to that clip. And then I said, if you want to know more, here's my website. And you know, I didn't actually take note of how many friends I had on that vanilla Facebook before and after. But I do recall kind of coming back and going, wow, there's not very many friends there.
Yeah.
And it's okay. It's totally okay because that authenticity is so delicious. So I've given myself the permission to do it. I'm certainly not going to run around and, you know, well, I was going to say I'm not going to run around and tell the checkers at the markets, but that's not exactly true because I was going to teach a class somewhere. I was at Trader Joe's. It was right before they were closing. It was right up at 9 o'clock and I had just worked out and this young lady was checking me out and she said, so how are you doing tonight? And I said, I'm great. I'm a little stressed out though, because I have a class to teach, you know, a big crowd of people tomorrow. And she said, what do you teach? Well, you know, why wouldn't she say that? And for the first time, I remember not even hesitating. And I said, I teach about strap-on sex. It's also called pegging. And she said, that's awesome.
Yeah. That's how you find your people.
Yeah, I'm not to the point of running around, you know, with it on my t-shirt because it is a sexual thing and kids are out there and, you know.
Yeah.
But, yes.
You know, that brings up an interesting thing for me. When I first started the cuddling, the platonic cuddling, how was I going to do platonic cuddling as this out sex geek blogger, very sexual person, right? And it was like one of those moments where, and here I am talking about platonic cuddling or platonic touch on a podcast about pegging, and like, how can people separate that with me? Like, I had to like have a little talk with myself and realize that I'm okay separating it. And maybe I don't separate it. And maybe I'm okay with not separating it. I'm not sure how to word this. I accept my sexuality, and I have to believe that other people can accept it too. And that doesn't mean they're entitled to it.
Well, and the more clear you are with your boundaries, I mean, at least this is how it feels with me, because I run into the same thing, because I host cuddle gatherings sometimes. And I have been careful so far to use my other name with those people, and they don't know that I'm Ruby. For this exact reason, is because it's like, oh my God, she's got a peg, you know, she's got a website about pegging. Oh my God, this is going to be so weird. You can just picture all of the assumptions, all of the judgments, and the potential rejection, and on and on. This is the story I'm making up in my head.
Yeah.
At the same time, if I'm really, really clear about my boundaries, then I'm really clear about my boundaries. It's like, oh my God, you have this thing. Yeah, that's another part of my life. And my boundaries with this over here are exactly this.
Yeah, I think the benefit with me is that I can do some sex education while we're cuddling. You know, there's plenty of, you know, talking about, you know, I get older men that are like, I'm afraid to date because I have erectile dysfunction. And so we spend an hour talking about how to talk about it while we cuddle because they're safe, you know, and it's comfortable for them. Or I'm teaching them about where they can go out and meet women because they're, you know, 84 years old and they're having a really hard time not making our session sexual. And rather than kicking him to the curb, I take the hour to try to help him fish. You know, just take the fish away, or I can help him fish. And so I'm really comfortable in my sexuality. I'm really comfortable with sex. And so it makes it really easy for me to not confuse the two with, you know, confuse sex and touch.
Yeah. What it reminds me of is where I hold the line as Ruby D in talking sexually with anybody that sends me questions. And I have that cut and paste thing because I get the sexualized come on a fair amount. And basically what the lines are is, I will talk to you about pegging. I will answer your questions about pegging. I will even answer your questions about your relationship or how you talk to your partner about it. I'll answer your questions about BDSM. But the moment that you start talking about me and you, that is where you're crossing the line. Because that's not the place that I go. But in terms of talking about all the other stuff, I am so comfortable talking about sexual things at this point that it kind of blows my mind.
Yeah, I got called. I had an older client. He was in his 70s, and he started calling me the professor because he'd never talked to anybody about sex before.
Oh my gosh.
Like, he's from a generation he didn't have sex ed. And we got to talking during our session. He had some questions around masturbation. And I was educating him about vibrators, and he's just like, men can use vibrators? And I'm like, oh boy, let me teach you some things. And it's like, to me, that's just me putting on my teacher hat, right?
Yeah.
And in retrospect, you know, he enjoyed the conversation. He confessed to me later that it was arousing to him. I was a little disappointed, but I wasn't surprised because that's pretty standard.
Sure.
I'm a sex geek. I like to say that I talk about sex like it's very clinical, and it doesn't wet my panties, you know? It's just information, and I love spreading information. And so, you know, I struggle with how to handle that. Cause I will talk about it, and it's not my responsibility how you react to it. I appreciated his honesty about it, and, you know, we move forward, but I love the fact that I get those chances to educate on all sorts of fun things, and it's not my responsibility.
It's just beautiful. I mean, that conflation is what's coming up in my head right now because, you know, not only is there a conflation due to deprivation and lack of teaching the skills between loving, tender, non-sexual touch and sexual touch, but our society is so sex negative in terms of talking openly about sex in so many places. I mean, talk about privilege. Here I live in California. You know, surrounded by a community of sex positive people. So I am just ultimately privileged in this regard, but I'm not blind to the fact that there's people out in the middle of Kansas where you can't talk to anybody anywhere you live about sex because it's just simply not done. So if that is the case for a lot of people, then there's that conflation of you're talking about sex, so I need to get sexual, kind of, because it's just so rare for them to have someone who speaks so comfortably about sexual things.
Yeah, and it's a scarcity thing too, though, because if sex is scarce to them, it's hard not to let your imagination start to talk for you. And I used to joke, I used to have on my online dating profile that I was a sex geek. And I even put the definition, you know, via Reid Mahalko on my OkCupid profile to like say, hey, this is not an invitation to sexualize me. This is the way it is. And people couldn't read. I used to joke that basically as soon as the blood flowed to the head of their penis, like their brain quit functioning. And it's like they couldn't read past the word sex. And so I got inundated with, you know, asinine responses to that, mm-hmm. about, you know, all they could see it as sex geek must mean nymphomaniac, I'm guessing. But
mm-hmm.
we do live in a bubble, Ruby. We live in a bubble. I don't think you have to be in Kansas to feel that way. I think that we just live in a very privileged place of sex positivity and sex abundance, whether you're getting it yourself or you're just in an atmosphere where you could, it changes the way you behave. So most of society does not look at sex from a place of abundance.
This is true. There, in another place of scarcity, is not just how much you're getting, but there are not that many women out there who speak really, really openly about sex. There just aren't.
Yeah.
And so that is what I think happens most of the time when I get the inappropriate responses to what I put out there in the world, is absolutely the blood flows going to the other head. No question about that. But it's also because men get so excited that they've finally found a woman that is open and willing to talk about sex, because they hardly ever find that.
Yeah. And then they don't know what to do with us. So there's a whole nother problem. But
well, they don't know how to respect us and talk to us at the same time.
Right. Well, even if they do, let's say they've gotten past that barrier. Let's say that they actually know how to talk to you and not sexualize you. And they get into, they pass go, they collect $200. They get in your pants. Okay. Let's say they've gotten that far.
Oh, okay.
My friend Michael likes to say they've always wanted you. They just don't know what to do with you. Like, it becomes that, oh crap, what have I got myself into? And I'm not saying from like, oh my God, she's a freak, mm-hmm. but like there, it's intimidating.
Oh God, word again.
They want a sexually liberated woman, but that's also really intimidating. And so we need more of us, so it becomes the norm.
I totally agree. I love what I saw posted recently about he is intimidated. That doesn't mean I am intimidating.
Yes,
because I get that a lot. And well, it's taken me years to get to the point where I am. And sometimes I forget that. Sometimes I forget that I can talk about sex as easily as I can talk about what I'm going to make for dinner. Not a problem.
Yeah.
But it is not that way for the vast majority of people out there. And even if the vast majority of people out there were to move a little bit further over, you know, and start having those conversations. I mean, I know that I say a lot on my podcast that pegging, I consider it to be a varsity activity, and you need to have good communication in bed. So sometimes I ask people right off the bat, I don't always, but I probably should. So do you communicate about sex? Do you talk about sex? What do you mean? That's not a good sign when they ask that.
No.
Do you talk about sex? Can you talk about the sex that you have, what you like, what you want? Do you talk in bed?
Do you talk out of bed? Like,
yeah, or out of bed.
I was talking with Paul as we drove to a restaurant the other day, discussing like, I won't go too personal, but discussing our sex life and what we could do to, you know, make this better, or, you know, like we're having a sit down discussion while we're driving, you know, just very frankly, and we're geeking out on our own sex life.
I love it.
So it's not even just talking about it in bed, but are you talking about it out of bed?
Mm-hmm.
Is it comfortable?
Yeah, talking about out of bed, because that can feel like a safer place, but also talking about it in bed in terms of being authentic and not tolerating and asking for what you want and all kinds of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there is just so much territory to cover before we change the world.
Yeah. Not everybody can have a master's in that or a doctorate.
No,
but they can make little steps and it just kind of snowballs.
Yes, indeed.
We've talked about it before. You didn't have it when you were married. I didn't have it when I was married. You talked
right.
about, like, you know, hoping that, you know, they just magically would know what you want. I remember, I think the first mm-hmm. time we talked, that was your quote, you know,
yes.
it's just practice.
It is. And it's feeling safe too. And it's, I think the most beautiful thing that can happen in a relationship is that dedicated interest and commitment towards knowing your partner the best that you possibly can and finding yeah. out what makes them tick and inviting them to share with you those deeper layers all the time.
Yeah. I had somebody reach out to me. Somebody I do not know reached out to me on Facebook. I know his partner. And he reached out to me because he's really concerned that he's losing her, is what he said.
Hmm.
And I said, at the end of our conversation, he said, please don't tell her that I told you this or that I told you specifically that I was afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, your privacy is completely safe with me. But may I encourage you to share it with her? Because that is the stuff that you can't be afraid that that's going to end your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're already afraid your relationship is going to end. Why not share that and let that be something that brings you closer together? Because mm-hmm. if it's ending, it's going to end. It doesn't matter whether you say something or not. So why not risk saying it so that they can put that at ease for you?
Yeah. And if you don't say it, if you don't express it, then you've got that made up story inside you. And it creates a whole mm-hmm. nother layer that affects everything and has far-reaching consequences because that story is still there. And so every time something happens that might support that story, you're going, yeah, well, I thought so.
Your brain will find all the evidence you need.
Yes. But if you just say, you know what, I'm making up a story in my head and I'm afraid you're going to leave me because, you know, X, Y, and Z, whatever.
And how endearing would it be to hear that your partner is afraid to lose you? Like, that's not giving up power. Like, that is showing your appreciation. And, like, we don't want to lose the things that we love.
It shows me two things if someone did that with me. It would be the intense vulnerability of that moment, which would be astonishingly valuable mm-hmm. to have my partner be that willing to be that vulnerable with me. But it would also express to me how much they want to be with me. They wouldn't mm-hmm. be, just like you said, they wouldn't be sitting there saying that if they didn't care.
Yeah. And it's like, it's a toxic masculinity. He's afraid of looking weak. And
you're not supposed to need anything. Yeah. That's that need
yeah.
thing. Ah, drives
yeah.
me nuts.
They're not supposed to ever be afraid. They're not supposed to need. They're not, like, it's as simple as just being like, it's a conversation of literally, I am afraid of losing you. What do you need from me? I feel like I'm not meeting your needs. Is there something I can do? And they may not be ready to share with you, but if you just keep making the invitation, because it's not just men that don't want to talk about it. Women
no,
don't want
not.
To talk about it either. Nobody wants to have the difficult conversation, but in the chance that you think that this might be a relationship changing conversation and maybe not for the best, that is where the growth in the relationship happens. If you're not willing to take any risk to talk about what you need, like, you're never going to grow and the relationship's going to die anyways, or it's going to get really stagnant and you're going to end up having to go somewhere else to get your touch needs met. I mean,
mm-hmm.
it goes full circle. You know?
Yeah, I love the thing that Reed Mahalko says about step into the awkward. And
yeah.
I can't tell you how many times I've done that in a moment. And it's not just like the deep, you know, relationship changing, you might leave me moments. It's any moment. It's any moment where awkwardness is there, you know, mm-hmm. and you just name it and bring it up and say, well, all right, This is feeling really awkward because of X, Y, and Z, but I'm good, you know, or whatever it is. The willingness to feel awkward and state it and put yourself out there is so lacking for so many people. They'd rather just not say anything.
Yeah. Reed is the same one that encouraged me to speak my fears. It's mm-hmm. that if you speak them, they lose a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the gift I would give everyone. Like that
yeah.
is such an easy, it was so hard to start doing it. But now that I've started doing it, it's so easy to continue doing it
mm-hmm.
because the reward is huge.
Yes.
And it's one of those things you don't know till you try it.
So part of the reason I wanted to do this with you and talk like this is because most of my listenership are men. And mm-hmm. I think that all of this information is so important to just get a little bit of view into what it's like for us as who we are in the fields that we are and what we know and what we've observed and all of this, I think, is just such valuable information. I've never been more honored than one guy who wrote in, and he said, I don't think you realize how powerful your podcasts are. Every single time I listen to one, I either learn something about relationships or I learn something about pegging.
Mm-hmm.
And another one of my guys said, you know, you said, step up to the plate and make sure that your partner, you know, due diligence, make sure your partner's totally taken care of sexually before you start asking for all kinds of stuff for yourself. And he said, just that, I embraced just that, and it's changed my life and my relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So there's so many things.
And here's the beauty. They learn by example. And so our conversation set an example. My sessions with my clients set an example. Mm-hmm. If you come to a cuddle party, you're learning the language. And that's something I ask my cuddle party participants a lot. Like, tell me, as you go around the circle and introduce yourself, tell me why you keep coming back to cuddle party. And they're like, because it overflows into the rest of my life. I'm a better communicator. And we can do that. We can practice that. You don't have to have both partners doing the work at the same time. One person can be upping their skills outside of the relationship and bring it back into the relationship and set that example for their partner. And that's something that we get to do in cuddling sessions, is we get to practice asking for what we want. We get to practice figuring out what we want. That's the first step. Like, people don't even know what they want because they've never given themselves permission mm-hmm. to ask themselves. In a cuddleless session, it's about empowering. And so we really want our clients to practice, put themselves out there and realize that they can get a yes. It's not guaranteed. And I'm only going to say yes if I really want to be a yes. And then they get to feel what that feels like. And suddenly you don't want people to be yeses if they're not really yeses.
That's so important, that authenticity. I mean, I think if I had to just choose one word that those cuddle parties teach, it would be authenticity. And it's so unfortunate that authenticity is kind of rare.
But we're supposed to be polite.
Absolutely. And it's so, that is the first part, is trying to figure out what you want and what you don't. And then there's also that other thing about, you can be right in the middle of something and change your mind. Imagine that.
Yeah.
And there's so much freedom in that when you think about it and taking that next step and actually doing it and disengaging and saying, you know, I think I've had enough. I'm going to change and do something else now, or however you choose to say it, can be really a scary thing. Because like you said, be polite. Let's not say we're done until they're done. But then you are tolerating it for the rest of the time mm-hmm. that you're there doing whatever you're doing.
The rules of cuddle party are so important and carry out throughout everything that I touch in my life. And, you know, even like, I don't know if you remember the yes, no exercise where you have to say yes to everything that's requested. And then you have to say, first you say no to everything that's requested. Then you say yes to everything that's requested.
Uh-huh.
And to watch people really be able to, that exercise, the one thing that exercise does that I'm able to point out now, because it was pointed out to me and it was like an aha moment for me, was you can feel the difference in your body when you want to be a yes and you have to say no, or when you want to be a no and you have to say yes. And when people just that awareness that there is actually a feeling, it feels so much different, and you can start listening to that feeling. How does that change your life?
Wow, that is authenticity right there.
Like really feeling it.
I remember doing the exercise where they said, okay, so now, you know, match up in pairs. And, you know, one person is going to ask the other person if they can do some kind of cuddling with them. And you're expected to say no. And I said something like, you know, can I come and hug you from behind and put my head on your shoulder? And the guy's like, I don't want to say no to that.
Right. Yeah. And it's an awareness that people are not used to practicing.
Yes.
And that's really, it's really fun too, because you get to figure out like what people really, you can tell what people want to say yes to, but they can't. And then you find that's a real easy way to either figure out if they're kinky, because there's always those inappropriate questions that come up, like, can I pull your hair? And you're like, no, I have to say no. And so it ends up coming up in conversation later. My cuddle parties are always full of people from the kink community. So those conversations come up anyways. But it's funny because you can start to read people. And that's a really good quality, because think about how many of the Me Too stories are about people not reading body language.
I know. And you can get so much more sensitive to it at these types of gatherings where the cuddling is happening. These facilitated mm-hmm. gatherings. Yes, I totally agree. I mean,
yes.
So I was telling someone about these cuddle gatherings, right? It was a woman who was about 45 years old. She's single mom, still lives with her son who is, I think he's about 17 now. So I, you know, she's not getting a lot of touch. She's single. And I said, you know, these cuddle gatherings, and what do you think? And she said, I don't know, because I just can't stop imagining that I would be the one sitting in the corner that nobody asked to cuddle.
Mm.
And I said, why wouldn't you go ask someone? And she was blown away because she never even considered it. That was not in her awareness. For whatever reason, she automatically clicked into, I'm either going to get asked or I'm not. And I'm mm-hmm. such a controlling, dominant, extroverted type of person that I can't picture it any other way. You know, somebody might come up and ask me, but man, I go get what I want. Mm-hmm. And I can either have it sometimes or I can't. But it blew my mind that's the way she worked. She would never mm-hmm. even think about it. And you know, her eyes got wide when I said that to her. She's like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. We laughed about mm-hmm. it. Which you can discover so much. So I do want to encourage everyone listening, Michelle, the professional cuddlist who does cuddle parties as well, but it mainly does like, you know, cuddle sessions. She is bi-coastal.
I am moving to San Diego. Like, I am not going to be in Michigan.
So let's correct that. It's happening. Yeah. She's been moving towards this, going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And so now she is in San Diego. So if you're anywhere near San Diego and any of this sounds good, when I don't know how it can't. If I listen to all of this, I'm like, I want to go lay in that woman's arms for an hour.
We can, you know, if a cuddle party is overwhelming, because some people, the idea of going into a room full of strangers in their pajamas and uh-huh. having to ask for what they want and do all the exercises feels really overwhelming.
Yes.
We can do it in a private session. It's not something that has to be done in a group setting.
That's interesting, because I would have actually pictured it the other way around. For some reason, mm-hmm. I was thinking in my awareness that, okay, if I go to a gathering, then it's like, it's a little less threatening than just like one person for an hour. But
no.
I see your point. The threatening part for some people can be all the other people there and how to interact with them and being authentic with them.
I have a friend that comes to mind who is so gregarious and an extrovert, and she is mortified at the idea of going to cuddle parties. And so every time I facilitate them once a month in Michigan, every time I hold one, I thank everybody for being brave enough to show up, because it is so overwhelming for people. And it's, it's so funny how quickly it becomes really comfortable, because we do a lot of icebreaker type exercises. So you're not asking strangers to cuddle. You've gotten to know them over the course of 45 minutes to an hour workshop. But it's still too much for some people, and we can totally do it in a private session and work through the rules and practice, you know, asking for things, and I can practice telling you no if that's what you need to hear, or you can practice asking for things that you know are a no, like whatever you need, we can do that. I want to say that there's a lot of parties out there like Cuddle Party, or that go by a name similar to Cuddle Party. I can't say what you're getting with those. I can say with Cuddle Party, the facilitators have been through an intensive training. They know how to hold a safe space. And as somebody who's walking into a room with people and asking to become physically close with them, having that safety is really important. And if you don't know what kind of environment it is, you don't know what the rules are as far as sexual contact, I would be cautious. And so I highly recommend Cuddle Party officially, just because I know exactly what the rules are and what the training is. And it's intense. And if you want to do training, that's super awesome and life-changing too. But you can find parties near you at cuddleparty.com. And then Cuddlist, I can speak for Cuddlist because I know what their training is. There's other cuddle websites out there. I can't say that any of their people have any kind of standard that they go by. And I can say with Cuddlist that there is a standard session. There is a way a session doesn't look the same, but it always starts the same. And it has the same premise to it. And it's about empowerment. It's about consent. It's about boundaries. So if you want to find out more about a Cuddlist in your area, you can find them at cuddlist.com.
And all those links are going to be in the Linkorama, as always. One of the things that surprised me was how many misconceptions people have about those kind of parties. It's like, no, you're not going to get assigned a cuddle partner for the night.
No, you don't even have to cuddle at a cuddle party.
I know. And correcting that assumption blows my mind. It's like, well, I don't know. I wouldn't want to go unless I had somebody to go with. And I said, look, if you're going to bring somebody to cuddle with, just cuddle with them at home or somewhere else, you know?
Or, I mean, you can have a buddy. You can have a buddy if that makes it easier to show up.
A buddy, but to be so, I don't have a partner, so I can't come. If having a buddy with you would make you feel more secure and more comfortable, then that's awesome. But it's not like, I have brought a partner to cuddle with for the night. That's not how it works. And for me, the exciting part, the fun part, are those moments where you really don't know what's going to happen. And sometimes those moments turn out to be just exquisite. And sometimes they're just kind of eh. But, you know, to find yourself laying on your back with five people surrounding you, two people are caressing your feet, two people are caressing your hands, and one person is rubbing your head. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Talk about what your nervous system can't handle all that. Like it can't in a good way. You have that many people touching you, your body can't keep track of who is where and whatnot. It's just complete overload, but in the best possible, yummiest way. Yeah. Can I share my favorite cuddle party story?
Please.
My favorite cuddle party story is about a woman who came with the intention to only cuddle women because that's who she's attracted to. And she ended up cuddling with a man. I'm guessing the man probably asked. And she said yes. And what she ended up doing was she cuddled with men the entire night because it reminded her of her father. And she didn't expect it at all. It came out of complete nowhere. And she was kind enough to share the experience with me as it was happening. She was telling me how she was completely blown like out of the water, that the evening was not going the way she had expected it to or how she intended it to go and how healing it was for her. And that, like, one of the reasons that I love, you know, Cuddle Party, but just such a beautiful story. And the other stories that I love are like women that are empowered to start saying no outside of Cuddle Party to other things in their life.
Yeah. Watching women, you know, leave the Cuddle Party and then maybe the next couple of days at work, just kind of sit back when someone says something appropriate or it's like, no, you know, they sort of sit back and evaluate it and go, no, am I a hell yes with this? No, I'm not even a yes. I'm a no.
Two things that changed my life meeting Betty Dodson and doing the body sex workshop and really learning to love my vulva, first mm-hmm. thing, really changed my life. And Betty Dodson will tell stories about women, you know, they leave her workshop and they go and ask for a raise. You know, confidence in your vulva changes your life. The other thing that changed my life was Cuddle Party. The two most powerful things in my life.
Wow. Lucky that you got that training with Betty Dodson when she was still doing a bunch of those. Is she still?
She still is. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh.
And I've started offering my own version with great respect to Betty Dodson. Myself and a friend of mine in San Diego have started launching our own workshops that are very, very owed to, but we do them on a much quicker. Betty's workshops are like 2 days long. We want them to be accessible and more affordable so that people that can't afford to go to Betty Dodson, which I always say, go to Betty Dodson or go to one of Betty's certified facilitators, because she has people that are certified to do body sex all over the world.
Wow.
But for Sarah and I, it's really important to take it to the people that can't get to those because they're not accessible for whatever reason. And so we're offering a shorter, more condensed, our own version of it. And it's super lovely and it's super scary for people. And when they're ready to do it, it's such a lovely thing to be a part of. I feel very blessed to have Sarah and I working together to hold that space for women. And it's so powerful. And the fact that it changed my life so much that I get to bring it to other people, just like Cuddle Party. I'm super lucky.
Now talk about vulnerability. Yes.
Yeah. No, there's not much more vulnerable than that. Like that's like, again, this is varsity stuff, you know, for sure.
Wouldn't it be great if there was something along those lines for men? Is there that you know of?
I'm sure there's some men's groups that can offer something. I'm not sure if it's right. If we're talking like, I don't know what penis confidence. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
If you can ever read, if you have a chance to read Betty's memoir, it is so fantastic. She talks about, she held some men's only body sex workshops a couple of times. I think her quote is something like, if she had continued to do them, she wouldn't be alive still. Like they were, I think it was more stress for her than anything else, but certainly would be really valuable. I don't know how to do them. I don't know how to do, like, people have asked about co-ed. I'm like, I don't know that you can really create the same space.
Yeah, I mean, there's the OM thing that people were doing, but just totally from my perspective, the local OM chapter down in LA just always had a really weird vibe to it. Just not something I'm interested in.
And that's still vulva centered.
Yes.
If you're looking for something that's centered towards male bodied individuals, I'm sure there's probably something, maybe in the tantra world. Yeah.
Well, you know, baby steps, one step at a time. Let's try and get the communication and the emotions and all of that happening.
Yeah.
And for everybody listening, here's the deal. You know, break the chain. This may have been what was done when you were raised. No matter what gender body you identify with or were born with, but break the chain. If you can see through all of this that you've just listened to, that there are things that you wish were done differently to you as a child, then do them differently for your children, or talk with your friends who have children, you know, expose them to some of the things that are going to be in the Linkorama with all the Mark Green stuff. And like I said, I can't wait until I get that book, the relational book for parenting, because it all starts with the kids. That's the thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. If you're learning these skills as an adult, you're going to pass them on to your children. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't have cuddle parties for 6-year-olds, but I can give the parents the tools so that they can be a better example to their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I've done with my kids, is as I've grown in the last 4 years after, you know, getting out of the marriage to their father, is that my skill set has increased so much. So their skill set has increased so much. And it all rolls downhill in the best possible way, you know?
Yes. Yeah, I homeschooled my daughter for a lot of the time that she was at those educational ages as well. And I have a friend who's recently having a very tough time with her two adult sons. And she said, you know, I envy you that. You seem to have a very easy and loving relationship with your daughter. And I am so blessed. And I take credit because, you know, that was me breaking the chains. Definitely. Mm-hmm. There were so many chains that I broke when I raised her. And, you know, there's healing in both ways. I never got as much touch as I really wanted when I was a kid. So mm-hmm. I offered her endless touch. And, you know, she got her fill of it. And you know, when she was little and she was doing that egocentric sort of, okay, I'm separate from you now. I'm going to separate from you. That was a stage she was going through. I used to sing the Barney song about, you know, give me a hug. I can't sing it now, but I used to be able to sing it. It was the Barney song to get her to come and hug me. Well, that was all about me. Mm-hmm. And I recognized, wow, I'm doing a lot of healing of myself here, raising this child. This blows my mind.
Yeah, it's really funny. I'm the cuddler, and I really don't, my kids are at that age. I don't know how, we don't have the close cuddly stuff that we had when they were little. And, you know, we hug not as often as we probably could.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that I have all this and I don't have a super physical touchy relationship with my sons. We have a lot of we share a lot, you know, emotionally and whatnot, but the physical part surprisingly isn't there.
Mm.
And that's my confession, my come clean, as it would be, is that, you know, even the cuddler doesn't cuddle her kids.
I do some of that with my daughter, but I find that it has to be conscious. And I think it's so easy to fall into what I grew up with. And what I grew up with, yeah, we hugged sometimes. But as soon as I got past mm-hmm. a certain age, there was just that, you know, the hugging goodbye and hello. And so now sometimes when I'm just sitting on the couch watching a movie and my daughter's laying there, I'll just, you know, grab her feet and start rubbing them a little bit. And just consciously try and make those little non-threatening touch things. And I've raised her well enough to where if she doesn't want that,
she will tell you.
She's like, Mom, thanks. Not in the mood right now.
Yeah. No, I know your daughter. She's an excellent human being.
Oh, thank you.
I will give you references.
Okay. Well, I think we might be done here. So I can't thank you enough for spending all of this time with me and talking about so many of my favorite things, my passionate interests, and how they all interweave. Because we come from similar perspectives, but we also come from different perspectives. And I just find it all endlessly fascinating. So I hope everybody listening found it as fascinating as I did.
Thank you so much for having me. I felt like one of our usual conversations on the phone, and maybe we should start recording our conversations more often, but
yeah,
it's important stuff to talk about. And I'm glad that you have this forum, and I'm glad that we're lucky that we talk about it all the time in our lives. And I hope that other people can start weaving these conversations in, because it's important.
Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
I'm hoping to talk to your guy, because he had some insights about touch and men. So I'm hoping to include that on the same podcast. He got back to me and asked when I wanted to talk, and then he was totally down. So I'm excited.
Oh, I love him. I told him a long time ago that I thought we would work together one day.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel that, like, there's some point to our relationship, not just for us. I think we're a good role model to the people around us, but I think that there's so much that we could do together, because he's just such a lovely, lovely, lovely human being.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now your modeling is just phenomenal. And that you're willing to share all of that, you know?
Yeah.
You share a fair amount of that.
I'm so proud of him. He's done so much work. And
so
I could
gush
on about him forever.
Okay. Well, we could talk forever. I'm going to say goodbye. And thanks once again. All right, my dear. I love you.
Thank you. I love you too. I'll talk to you soon.
You have reached the end of Pegging Paradise podcast number 200, part 2.